Jaya Radha Madhava Vakunya Vihari. Joy Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari. Nopinana Malabha Hiribaruta Ure. Gopi Janabalabha Hidibaru Daute. Yasodanandana Rajadanarandana. Yasodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Manachare. Yamuna te Ravana chauti. Jaya Randhu Madhuva Kunya Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunya Bihari. Gopi Dana Balabha Hiribaru Daude. Gopinana Balabha Hiribaru Daute. Hiribaru Daute. Yasoda Nandana Rajajanu Ranjana. Sodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Jamuna Tera Panachati. Yamuna Tera Panachati. Jaya Randhu Madhuva Kunya Bihari. Jaya Randhu Madhuva Kunya Bihari. O Madhuva Bihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravritakacharya Also Teta Tsitashi Shimad. His Divine Grace Abhaya Chananad Abhaktivananda Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Shadohiras Thakur Kajai. Prem Se Gaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidvaita Gadadha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindakajaya Shishi Radhakrishna Gopi Gopinath Shai Mukunda Radhakunda Kiri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturidam Kijai Jagadathasami Kajai Yamunamai Kajai Shimari Lassi Devi Kajai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindakajaya Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay, so we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 20th chapter, text 16. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Marga Babu Sangit Sandig Das Chanaish Chana He Samskritaha Dabyasya Manaha Shutaiho Advijahai Kalena Chahataha Marga Babu Sandigdas Trinais Chanda Yasam Skritaha Nabyasya Mana Nabhyasya mana shrutayo shrutayo dvijay kalena chahataha marga babhuvu sandigdas trinaischana yasam skritaha Nabhyasya mana shutaiho Dvijay kalena chahataka Marga babhu sandiktas Trinaischanaya samskritaha Nabhyasya mana shutaiho Vijay Kalena Chahataha. Okay. Mana Shrutayo. righty. Hold on a second. Back to the word by words. Margaha, the roads. Babu, who became. Sandigdaha, obscured. Chinahe, by grass. Janaha, covered over. He, indeed. Asangskritaha, not cleansed. Na abhyasyamanaha, not being studied. Ashutayaha, the scriptures. Dvichahai, by the brahmanas. Kalena, by the effects of time. Cha, and. Ahataha, corrupted. So translation, during the rainy season, the roads, not being cleansed, became covered with grass and debris, and were thus difficult to make out. These roads were like religious scriptures that brahmanas no longer study, and thus become corrupted and covered over with the passage of time. So you can repeat, during the rainy season, the roads not being cleansed became covered with grass and debris, and were thus difficult to make out. These roads were like religious scriptures that brahmanas no longer study, and that thus become corrupted and covered over with the passage of time. So there's no purport by the servants of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, but we do have a commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states, not studying the scriptures is compared to the unclean paths. Scriptures being lost due to time is compared to the paths overgrown with grass. The scriptures and the path are both defiled. This is unfavorable for the brahmanas. Jiva Goswami says the roads are like the Vedas, not being studied, destroyed by Kali Yuga. There is a version with Shrutiya Iva and with Kalena Ahata as well as Kalena Hataha. The word Iva means and. All right, so we'll go back to the text again. Marga babu sandhigdas trinaischana yasamskritaha navyasyamana shrutaihu dvijay kalena chahataha. So Om Gana Tibidanda Shah. Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur and Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. And also I'm going to read Srila Prabhupada's translation here in the light of the Bhagavat and Prabhupada's short purport. In the rainy season, some of the roads are not frequently used and become covered with long grasses, and thus it becomes very difficult to see the road. Similarly, in this age, the transcendental scriptures are not properly studied by the brahmanas. Being covered by the effects of time, the scriptures are practically lost, and it becomes very difficult to understand or follow them. And then Prabhupada's explanation. A covered road is exactly like a brahmana who is not accustomed to studying and practicing the reformatory practices of Vedic injunctions. He becomes covered with the long grasses of illusion. In that condition, forgetful of his constitutional nature, he forgets his position of eternal servitorship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by being deviated by the seasonal overgrowth of long grasses created by Maya. A person identifies himself with illusory productions of nature and succumbs to illusion, forgetting his spiritual life. So there's actually several ways we can understand this. One is like a very historical way. What do I mean by that? Is that during the previous Yuga, that is the Dwarpa Yuga, and especially the Treta Yuga, and what to speak of the Satya Yuga, you had the brahmanas recite the Vedic literature, what they consider to be the four original Vedas, Rigs, like Yajur, Atharva, Samaveda. Actually, okay. Speak louder. Oh my God. So during the rewind. So during the previous yugas, especially we're talking about Satya, Treta, and Dwapara Yuga, there was quite a bit of recitation of the four, what the Brahmanas consider the original Vedas, Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva Veda. The Rig Veda is the Veda of hymns. And it's interesting to note that most of the hymns in the Rig Veda are dedicated to the personality known as Indra. You know, if you actually do a count in the Rig Veda, you'll find that. Also in the Rig Veda, there's an interesting verse, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Pada Pashantiyat Surya. So people often ask, you know, where is Krishna? Where is Vishnu in the original Vedas? Well, he is all over in the original Vedas and also in the Upanishads. So the Brahmanas were very expert. And the Vedas, the four Vedas at least, were passed down through the process of memorization. And in order to properly utilize these four Vedas, there had to be exact, not only memorization of the words, exact memorization of the tempo, the music, you know, because you have the Samaveda dealing with musical stuff. And of course, the Atharva Veda is quite an interesting Veda. It deals with curses and different mantras for doing different things. Yeah, I guess we should have devotees study it so they can learn how to make money or produce gold or whatever like that. So apart from that, it required extreme memorization. Because it was Shruti. They're called the Shrutis, okay. And actually, if you analyze the Vedas as a larger body of work, you know, Veda in this particular context, meaning knowledge, and then you can actually break it down into Shruti, Smriti, Purana, Itihasa, like that. So for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, Shruti means that which is heard, not to hear. So in other words, you hear and you repeat exactly as you have heard. That's why they're called the Shrutis. And when the recitation of these mantras was there in the four Vedas, and particularly the Rig Veda, then you always had a Brahmin who would check your pronunciation and check your rhythm. And then you had another Brahmin, not only who would check, but he would actually correct when the checking Brahmin found something wrong. It's like proofreading. Mm-hmm. Just like Prajnanandan was just explaining to me that he writes something and then he has a wife who proofreads it and he has to do the whole thing over again. Something like that, right? You know. Oh, yeah, one more person. Okay. And so, of course, the Brahmanas were so expert that very rarely did they need proof reciting. Like that. But still, there had to be, because if someone pronounced something the wrong way, you would get no result or maybe the opposite result. Hmm. Just like that story of Ritrasura. You know the story of Ritrasura? Where you actually, there was a mantra being pronounced where he would be the enemy of Indra and said, you know, one syllable was pronounced the wrong way and then Indra would become the enemy of Ritrasura. You know, so, wow, you got to be really careful or you end up with a demon after pronouncing. You may be pronouncing some mantra to have some benediction, and then you'll end up with, you'll be killing your family members or something like that. So, I'll try to talk louder. And so, it's a really exact procedure. But the Itihasas and the Puranas were not like that. They're not like verbatim types of recitation. They are passed down throughout the time. Now, the interesting thing is that when you have bona fide spiritual masters and disciplic succession and everything like that, then you actually get the real version of the Puranas and Itihasas, even though the wording may change. It may actually change. And especially the Puranas are expanded upon when you have each succeeding generation of gurus. Like you have Prabhupada's purports on the Bhagavad Purana. And Prabhupada's purports of form and the purports of Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sridhar Swami, etc., they actually form an integral part of the Bhagavatam. Like sometimes devotees say, well, I should just read what the verse is. But actually, the whole Bhagavatam is there. Just like right now, we're going through the Bhagavad Gita in our nightly classes or evenly classes or in the evening. And we're reading Prabhupada's purports because they're a very important part of understanding the verses in the Bhagavad Gita. So anyway, I'm talking about disciplic succession. And sometimes those disciplic successions get broken. And Krishna himself mentions this in the Gita, doesn't he? He says, you know, Ivam Parampara Praptam, that this Bhagavad Gita knowledge was passed down Vivaswan, Manu, Ikshvaku, etc. First he taught it to the sun god, for those of you who don't remember this verse, then Manu and Ikshvaku. But in the course of time, this knowledge became lost. Because there was a break in the disciplic succession. As we often say, a chain is only as strong as the weakest link. So you may have like great people in your disciplic succession, a great acharya, but got one weak link and the thing is lost. And therefore Krishna had to come down and speak the Bhagavad Gita again. He didn't have to come down, sorry. He did come down to speak the Bhagavad Gita again because Krishna's devotees can do that too. So why am I mentioning this? Well, because many, as mentioned here, of the Vedic literatures have been corrupted because there's no bona fide disciplic succession in passing down the information. And which literatures am I mentioning? I mean, let's take the Mahabharata, and you may say, boy, you're an offender. You're blaspheming the Vedic literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version. You've heard that offense? One of the 10 offenses. The Maharaj is blaspheming Vedic literatures, saying the Mahabharata has become corrupted. I'm not saying the Mahabharata is corrupted, but the present versions of the Mahabharata. And that's not just my opinion. That is the opinion of Sripad Madhvacharya. He has a commentary to the Mahabharata, which I've actually read, called the Tatparanirnaya commentary. And in his commentary, he actually states this. He said, the Mahabharata has been corrupted. There's been things taken out, things put in, and things changed. Therefore, even this is understood by modern scholars who have ascertained there's something like 64, that's an auspicious number, 64 versions of the Mahabharata. And some of them differ dramatically. And not the main story. Of course, you always have the five Pandavas and Krishna and Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, all the main nice guys like Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. But you always have them. I'll give you a practical example. In one edition of the Mahabharata, this is South India, one of the South Indian editions, because the South India, they tend to be a lot more conservative than in North India. North India is pretty wild. So in South India, one of the South Indian editions of the Mahabharata, you have this whole story about Vyasadeva's birth. You know, his father was Parashara Muni, mother was Satyavati. Okay? Satyavati, she's rowing a boat. Let's talk about the North Indian version since that's more racy. So Satyavati, more interesting for those of us interested in romance. So Satyavati's rowing a boat. This is the version that most of us are familiar with, right? She's rowing the boat. She's rowing, thank you. Actually, I just got approval from Mother Ermila for today's class. She said very important points. Thank you. So that's a benefit of having your text messages on your watch. Anyway, so she's rowing the boat, you know, and she's not actually a fisherman's daughter. She's actually the daughter of the King Basu, but she came from the body of a fish. Okay. So she's rowing the boat, and as she's rowing the boat, and she really smells bad. Because, you know, you're born from a fish, you really have a problem there. So, and Parashara Muni gets on the boat, you know, to go across the river And he says to her, you know, basically, let's have a kid. And you know, and she says, well, we are in the middle of the river. I'm a young maiden. You know, this is not appropriate. And he says, no problem. I'll arrange it. You can always remain a young maiden. And he creates a big fog and everything like that. You've heard the story. Like one of those fog machines in a play, you see a fog machine. I think we're going to get one for the temple so we can do plays. So Vyasadeva is born as Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasadeva. So he's born, and so that's one version. Second version is you have a South Indian version, more conservative, not Krishna West version. But anyway, you have the South Indian version where there's a regular marriage. In other words, there's a whole Vibaha Yagya, you know, the three-day thing where everybody sweats and gets tired. You know, it's true. It's like very hot in South India. I've seen some marriages in South India. They're very interesting. Actually, each place in India, there are different types of marriages. South Indian marriage is quite interesting because you have this Kashi Yatra part of the South Indian marriage, which means that in the beginning of the marriage, the boy gets frightened and he runs away out of the marriage ceremony. It's part of the ceremony. It's a play, yeah. Has anyone seen this before? You've seen it. The boy runs away, scared. You know, what am I getting into? I'm going to have to work like an ass, you know, to maintain this. So then he runs away, and the bride and the bride's family runs after him outside, and they put him on a swing. You seen this, Galindi? You've heard about it. I've been at those marriages. Anyway, and they put them both on a swing, and they make them look at each other, and he falls in love, and then he decides, well, I'm an illusion. I better get married. So that's South India. That's the South Indian version. And so in that South Indian version of the Mahabharata, you actually have them getting married. You know, regular old thing, not on a river, but, you know, full vivaha stuff. And so what's happening? Well, we don't know. That's really true. That we don't know what actually happened with the marriage. So did it happen this way? Did it happen? And of course, if Prabhupada says it, that's another thing. But the problem is the Mahabharata has not been passed down in an unbroken disciplic succession. So therefore, exactly as mentioned here in this verse, that even the scriptures become lost. Not precisely lost, but misunderstood, misinterpreted. The story becomes changed a little bit like that. However, we do have literatures, and then we have devotees sometimes quoting from the Puranas about different things. I mean, they come out with the codicil books about, and from this Purana and that Purana, and it's scary. I get scared about all these things, you know, because all these injunctions, and not only all these injunctions, but even though you may have things that are passed down in disciplic succession that are not applicable for a time, place, and circumstance. I mean, for example, you have the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is definitely a pure work coming down in disciplic succession. And you have injunctions in the Hari Bhakti Vilas that are, some of them are applicable for, what, today? Some of them are applicable for 10 years ago. Some of them are applicable for 100 years ago. And some of them are for India. Some of them are for the United States. Some of them are for North Carolina. Some of them are for Florida. And no, I'm just making that up. So it's actually quite bewildering, the whole thing. You know, first of all, you got to have bona fide literatures, and you got to know what part of the bona fide literatures to apply, right? I mean, for example, in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, there's injunctions. Don't eat carrots. So you go to India sometimes, because, there's some Purana that says that carrots are the bones and the blood of some sage. You know, and you got all these different rituals too in India, you know, like snapping your fingers every time you yawn. because there's this whole because this whole story that Hanuman did that for Lord Ramachandra. But actually, it's not there in the Valmiki Ramayana. It's there in the Tulsidas Ramayana. You understand? And so when I go to Fiji, for example, it's really confusing for people because I'm telling stories from Valmiki Ramayana, which Prabhupada says is bona fide. We do have the original Sanskrit from the Valmiki Ramayana. And it's written in a certain meter, so you know it hasn't been changed, Sanskrit. So and so people get really bewildered when I start telling these stories, and I don't refuse to accept some of the stories that they know from the Tulsidas Ramayana. It just, you know, what are you talking about? Never heard that one before. And you know, they asked me a story. So what about when Hanuman did this? I said, I didn't know that Hanuman did that. So and also there's the South Indian Ramayana. Every language in India, you have a different Ramayana. You have a Telugu Ramayana, for example. And so, you know, what do you accept? Therefore, you need to really focus on what has been taught to us by our Srila Prabhupada and disciplic succession. It's an extremely important point, this disciplic succession thing. And, you know, right now, you know, we're talking in on the GBC, or some of us are talking about whether women can become gurus, you know, position of ladies, and, you know, all these different hermeneutical issues. And you have people taking from this part of the Vedas or that part of the Vedas, who knows whether it's applicable, whether it's actually been passed down in disciplic succession or not. And it's just like a quote war. You know, it's really amazing. It's really amazing. You know, you get quotes thrown at you that women should be this, they should always stay in the kitchen barefooted. And, yeah.
No socks.
No socks. And, you know, it's just like, huh? But I think we should stick with our acharyas. Like Prabhupada did say that ladies can become gurus. Lord Chaitanya said that ladies become... Lord Chaitanya didn't specifically say ladies. He said, Kiva vipra, kiva nyashi, shuja kena nai, ye krishna tatva veta se guru hoi. I mean, that pretty much covers everybody. Whether one is learned, whether one is a shudra. If one knows and practices the science of Krishna, then you can become guru. That's all. I mean, when one is self-realized, one is self-realized. It's not that a Krishna-conscious woman is less than a Krishna-conscious man. How could you say that? You know, someone's realized their spiritual identity. Well, because you have a different body, your realization of your spiritual identity is less than my realization of spiritual identity. You know, even though you know more verses from the Bhagavad Gita and know the whole Bhagavatam by heart, one of my god sisters does, Narayani. The whole Bhagavatam by heart. You know, whenever I want to know something, it's better than the Vedabase, I just call her up. You know, it's better than Google, better than the Vedabase. I just say, you know, where's this verse? She says, 10th canto, 5th chapter, verse 32, with the third line in the purport. She's like that, yeah. Narayani. Yeah, she's an amazing devotee and so humble. Just so humble, you know, just like, I mean, if I could become 1/10, 1/1,000,000,000 of Krishna consciousness, her, you know, I'd be happy. So, anyway, so I said that was one of the points I wanted to make from this verse, which is actually a really important point. You know, that we accept what Prabhupada has taught and, you know, we understand certain details and certain principles. Actually, Rupa Goswami makes this point in the Nectar Devotion. He says something about, he talks about basic principles, not details. He said, a basic principle is that one has to accept a spiritual master. Exactly how one follows the instructions of the spiritual master is considered a detail. For example, if one is following the instruction of a spiritual master and that instruction is different from the instructions of another spiritual master, this is called detailed information. So just like dealing with this woman's guru thing, sometimes they'll go to Ramanujacharya acharyas, or, you know, spiritual master and try to get advice from them. You know, that's not really the point. But the basic principle of acceptance of spiritual master is good everywhere, although the details may be different. Really important. Rupa Goswami does not mention, wish to enter into the details here, but he wants to place before us only the principles. So the other point I wanted to mention, you know, I want to leave myself time for this, is this particular verse talks about how Brahmins, you know, when they don't regularly recite the Vedic literatures, the literatures are lost and become very difficult to understand, and the Brahmanas actually lose their Brahminical status. This actually applies to us, too. What do I mean? And not that the literatures become lost because I don't read the Bhagavad Gita every day, which I do read the Bhagavad Gita every day. But if we don't regularly follow the essential practices of Krishna consciousness every day, then our understanding of the Vedic literatures becomes covered. I don't want to use the word lost. Becomes covered, and we deviate from Krishna consciousness. So in the Nectar Devotion, again, I'm going to make reference to the Nectar Devotion.
There are certain practices and principles. And yesterday I was thinking about this. Why was I thinking about this? Not because I'm preparing for class. But I was looking hearing the memories of so many devotees who were serving Prabhupada, and they were telling nice Prabhupada stories and everything like that. And then I was thinking, you know, not to find fault, but that some of them have really gone off the rails. They got in Prabhupada's mercy, they took Prabhupada's foot dust, you know, because there's all these stories, you know, I grabbed Prabhupada's foot dust, not from his feet, you know. You know, poor Prabhupada, you know, everyone. It's not like the Beatles, that the ladies were ready to tear the Beatles apart, so they had to have guards. But anyway, and you hear all these stories, and these, you know, very nice devotees have so much devotion for Prabhupada. And people just, you know, either they deviate from Krishna consciousness after some time, or they get into really weird understandings of things. Like, of course, Trista Prabhu sent me a text about something yesterday, which I'm not going to talk about. But it was just devotees into this really weird stuff. And I was thinking, you know, what can be done? I sent him a message back. I said, no, what can we do? And he says, nothing. And I was just thinking, you know, what happened? And what really happened is that there was neglect of the basic principles. And, of course, reading the Vedic literatures, which is mentioned here in the verse, you know, regularly read it. And of course, we have Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, right? Bhagati Uttama Shlokai Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki, by regular attendance in Bhagavatam class. So that means has to hear Bhagavatam every day. Just like we're talking about, or I'm not talking about, they're talking about the vaccine for the coronavirus. And it takes two shots, actually. Most of them are going to take two shots. And you may have to get a booster every once in a while, right? I mean, even with other types of vaccines, you definitely need a booster. Like tetanus, for example, you need a booster. I got bit by a dog a little while ago, and they said, you got to need a booster. And so, never got bit by a cat. So it's like that. We need a booster every day. By hearing regularly, we have to hear Bhagavatam every day. And so, therefore, you have these five essential items which are mentioned by Srila Rupa Goswami. He lists, of course, 64 items which are actually essential, but the five most essential items that people may neglect. Worshipping the deity every day. I mean, in other words, seeing the deity, even if you can't go on the altar. Worshipping the deity, seeing the beautiful face of Krishna. Because if you see Krishna's face, then you, as we mentioned many times before, you lose desire to what? Society, friendship, and love. Rupa Goswami states this in a very sarcastic fashion, isn't it? If you all desire to enjoy society, friendship, and love, don't go to see Krishna's plainest flute on the banks of the Keshi Ghat. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So these are the five factors, or five activities. associating among the devotees, advanced devotees. Because when we go off and we start to get into really wild things in our minds, and our minds will do that for sure, then the devotees can pull us back. Hey, Prabhu, hey, Maharaj. You know, do you think you should be running for office? Anyway, so, you know, just like I got a text the other day, are you willing to work for the campaign of this particular candidate? You know, they were actually putting out, you know, and I might say, yeah, it's a good idea, I want to work for him. But anyway, so the devotees correct us. That's why Prabhupada described, you know, many sticks together, what, can't be broken. One stick, easy to break. So when you're in the association of devotees, then, I mean, advanced devotees, not simply devotees who just placate you and just agree with any damn thing you say. Isn't it? You know, it's good. One needs that association. And then Sankirtan. These are essential items of devotional service. If you neglect that, of course, Sankirtan means a congregational chanting and actually absorbed chanting. You know, complete absorbed Sankirtan. Absorbed chanting. And the final one is living in Mathura. And what does that mean? You have to live in a holy place. You make your home a temple. If you're living in a home or you're living in a temple, temples should be, of course, a temple should be a temple too. So anyway, so by neglect, we can easily deviate, just like the Brahmins here. That was the point I was trying to make, in addition to the initial point I was making in class. So thank you very much. All glories to the divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.
Thank you. Thank you. Of the lotus feet of the Vaishnava clothes to cover my body? And when will I bear the flower of the crown of Egypt?
When will I see the inhabitants of the garden of the wheat, and judge whether from the inhabitants of the rush for now? And when shall I see the people of the blessed?
When shall I see the true form of the transcendental realm opening before my eyes? And when will I become a maid servant of our human favor around me?